Thanks very much for talking to me, Anthony, about this particular issue, which is the use of explosive weapons and KIPs by the Victorian police at a rally down at Webb's Dock. Can you explain to my listeners what you mean by these kind of weapons?
Sure. So Victoria Police have been using these weapons really since 2016 when they were provided through a big Victorian Labor Party community safety package. Billions of dollars worth of new equipment was provided to Victoria Police, partly in response to the racialised crime panic that was waging through Victoria around the time. Now, these weapons, including the batten round or rubber bullets, as they're sometimes called batten round launchers, or the pepperball guns that fire tiny round balls filled with OC spray or paint in some circumstances. They've been available to Victoria Police, but they've only been used in protest scenarios, really within the Victorian prison system, when prisoners protest or disrupt their incarceration in some form or another. So the critical incident response team generally deploy these weapons inside in those circumstances. They've also been deployed against, large Airbnb sort of parties out in the western suburbs at various times. And we saw them deployed first in August 2021 during the anti-lockdown protests. But on Friday night was one of the more recent times that we've seen these deployed against protesters who were picketing Azeem ship down at the Victorian International Container Terminal at Webb Dock in Port Melbourne.
Now, was this ordinary police or was this critical response?
It was the public order response team that has these weapons. They're generally available to the port reasonably quickly. It was about 8:30 when they were deployed at Webb Dock, so only a couple of hours after the picket was first established. Public order response team have them in those large blue vans that sometimes you see at protests. So all of these weapons are available in that. So the public order response team escalated their response to these pickets to what's sometimes called a level four riot response, essentially, where they had shields and the mounted unit horses were there, and they used, from what we understand, Mels didn't have a legal observer team present on the night, but from what we understand from reports and videos, they used the VKS pepperball guns to fire OC spray pellets, the batten round launchers to fire rubber bullets, and flashbangs that are explosive disorientation devices. They're also used in many other protest scenarios around the world, but also most namely in the West Bank and Garden Strip, ironically. So they're really loud, explosive devices that create flashes and 180 decibel or so explosions that they create. They're designed to create disorientation and panic and clear an area. And also the batten rounds that fire the rubber bullets.
I was just going to say that these are actually extremely dangerous, and someone actually has had serious repercussions, permanent injuries.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're classified as non-lethal weapons, but they're anything but. They can seriously injure, maim, and cause fatalities. And there's documented evidence from around the world of these being. Have killed and seriously maimed many, many people around the world. Their potential for misuse is really high. They don't have a high accuracy level. They can ricochet and bounce. If they're fired at people's heads and faces, they can cause permanent eye and injuries, of course. And in many of the studies over in Europe highlight the incredibly high rate of blindings that these projectile weapons can cause. Now, there were reports on Friday night of these bullets and projectiles being aimed at people's heads at head level, which is very concerning. Even if they're not deliberately aimed at people's heads, then of course they're equally as dangerous. So, yeah, there's a whole range of deep concerns about the use of these weapons on Friday night.
Now, they're considered to be torture as a cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment by the United Nations Human Rights Commission, if we look at it from a legal point of view.
Yeah, they can be used. So when they're used unlawfully, it goes into that into the Convention Against Torture territory. So like a lot of weapons, they can be used unlawfully. Now, police don't have unrestrained power to use force and use these weapons, of course. The principle of proportionality comes into play straight away. They need to be, their use needs to be necessary and proportionate under the circumstances, proportionate to the threat that is faced by the police. And what we saw on Friday night, although it's difficult to ascertain, but we understand that there wasn't the proportionate risk to police that warranted the use of these weapons. And that's something that, you know, that instantly prompts, you know, should instantly prompt condemnation from everybody. These weapons should only be used when there is a very clear and direct physical threat to officers. And that didn't appear evident at all from the footage that has appeared on the Friday night web doc community picket.
Well, if we go back to an earlier web doc picket, we saw footage of police doing things like using pepper spray on people who were lying on the ground already unable to defend themselves, as well as reports of them pulling a person from a wheelchair and leaving them on the ground there. And on Saturday there was a altercation between police and trans protesters, where it was reported, I'll have to say, on the Channel 9 news with visuals saying that the police were forced to use pepper spray because a demonstrator had broached their lines. We actually watched it. The person sort of stumbled in between a couple of police and then they lined up and then ferociously sprayed them. I mean, I'm sort of wondering about the training of the police.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, well, training is only one element of it, of course, but where there is worryingly routine use of OC spray that we would see as unlawful, where there's no direct lawful threat against police that warrant its use. So in that case, we had legal observers directly witnessing that incident. There was no police line that the person, that the people arrested went through. They just literally just went around in an area that was quite open, and police responded because they didn't have a police line established, and they responded in an incredibly panicky, quick way, and a brutal arrest that was, a use of unnecessary force at that particular time. And then when people tried to assist the people that were knocked over and on the ground and came up to remonstrate against the police, they were pepper sprayed. And that pepper spray indirectly affected a photographer who had been on the ground, knocked over, and many other people. So it was a classic example of, the overreach, the panicky responses from police, their propensity to use force that's unwarranted and unnecessary under the circumstances, and then the escalation to a chemical weapon that, again, was a disproportionate response to what was in front of them.
Well, of course, people who have never been to these demonstrations won't realise that this pepper spray isn't innocuous. It's quite foul.
Yeah, it's... At its very best, it is a burning, stinging, horrific sensation for many, many hours. But at worst, it can cause respiratory, serious eye damage, skin problems. But also, it is a chemical irritant that burns. And if it's in the throat or in the respiratory system, it can cause serious respiratory problems.
So if we have the police acting in this way as a reactive manner, And then they're given much more powerful, dangerous, explosive weapons. This is a real, and then it's been called a community safety package. This is quite just quite a worrying aspect to law enforcement, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've been tracking the rise and the escalation of these sort of violent and repressive crowd control measures over many years, as you know. We've called it for an immediate ban on the use of explosive devices such as the stinger grenades and the flashbangs, and that's mainly due to that there's a clearly documented accounts of their misuse and their danger to humans, to harm, maim or kill, and also the fact that existing accountability measures in Victoria and across Australia, including the measures under legislation that, you know, the restrictions on use of force in Victorian and in Australian legislation are not adequate, and the accountability measures within Victoria are simply not adequate to curtail or control the misuse of force by police. So, in light of that, if parliamentarians need to take responsibility and make sure that these weapons are not used when they can't be used lawfully, and, you know, routinely misused. So, that to us would be the ultimate solution to this. The availability of these weapons is to remove them from the hands of people who continually misuse them. There needs to be far tighter regulation across the board for all other weapons and alternatives to firearms that police might have. And again, the existing use of force regulations and prescriptions in law are just not adequate.
It takes us to one of the reasons for why MALs existed, came into existence in the first place, which is this kind of approach to dealing with civil dissent, which is a core right in a democracy, shows that the government and whoever they believe they're managing the situation for is diametrically opposed to the ordinary person who may be demonstrating.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and the police play a critical role, not just in enforcing the law and, you know, creating community safety as their you know, stated objective, but in ensuring that social movements don't grow to the extent where they threaten power holders and authorities. And that's something that we've described as strategic incapacitation. So Victoria Police and other police forces around Australia and around the world, for instance, will strategically work to ensure that movements are incapacitated to the extent where they can't grow and mobilise numbers that will threaten their ability to be controlled. And they'll do that in a whole variety of ways, including repressing, using force and weapons and large numbers of police. Any sort of mobilisations that can occur in the early days of a movement, and they will also use a whole range of media framing techniques, the demonisation of protest groups and movements, and maybe even individuals, and the strategic use of legislation and regulations to hamper movements being able to mobilise and grow. So it's an overarching strategy of which weapons that we're talking about today are only one really component of it.
The use of them and the level four riot approach at WebDoc on the 22nd tells us something about their belief around maintenance of order, in inverted commas, at the docks in particular.
It's one of the ironies of law enforcement around the world is that they perceive themselves as protectors of the peace and to limit disorder, and yet it's usually their intervention. In the vast majority of cases, it's the police's intervention itself which generates the harm, it generates the violence, it generates the disorder. And that's what we see continually, and that's what police accountability scholars have seen around the world and been documenting for many, many decades. It's the police intervention initially that generates the disorder and ultimately the harms and lack of safety.
It's really just a load of weasel words, really, isn't it? I mean, it's George Orwell made real.
Yes, indeed. The role of the police is, of course, is highly contested in lots of areas. But the police have a narrative that they are the protectors of public order and enforcers of safety. But for many communities, and particularly people on the streets who protest, you know, who are engaged in protests, the presence of police can be highly intimidatory, even if they're not doing anything per se. They're just accommodating the protest. So the large numbers of police, the way in which they police protests through containment lines or restrictions on movement and so forth, are all of concern to MELS. It's something that we monitor as well, how police restrict and control the ordinary use of public space by protest groups.
Yeah, because it's quite clear that level of attention by the police is designed to stop democratic process.
Yeah, and it can hamper and deter more people getting involved in a protest group. So, marches and rallies that are surrounded by police are less likely to have sympathetic onlookers join them. And it's in the police's interest to keep protests small and containable.
Yeah, and if we go back to the 22nd of March events, someone actually was hurt, weren't they?
Yeah, look, we received several reports of injuries, severe bruising, hits with batons and rubber bullets. So those people who were injured certainly can contact MELS and let us know, even if they don't want to take it further. There are legal options for people. They can, aside from formal complaints, which might be useful for a couple of reasons to have it on the public record, but largely aren't really an accountability pathway. There may be options for civil action. They're very difficult and rare and very hard, but there may be options that people could at least get advice on if they have grounds for civil action against police because of the injuries they sustained that night.
Thank you for talking to me.
Thanks heaps, Annie.